Daniel Manville is one of the few attorneys working in the growing field of prisoners' rights law in the state of Michigan. When a prisoner's rights are violated, Manville and his team of students at the Michigan State University College of Law are often asked to take the case. How does he know what prisoners need? He was one himself.
I spent 3 years, 4 months, 20 days, 22 hours, and 17 minutes confined.
It was 1973, and Manville was living a double life. He was in his third year at Central Michigan University, and he was dealing drugs on the streets of Flint, Michigan. He got into a dispute with another drug dealer and killed him. But he got lucky. Maybe it was because he was white. Maybe it was because he was a college student.
I was working for this probation authority out of Flint at that time period, and the guy that was in charge of it wrote like a 7-page letter to the judge. And this guy had been in the criminal justice system all his life. And he really helped me with that letter.
Manville ended up being sentenced to 3 years for manslaughter. At the sentencing, the judge said, "Look, Manville, you have two choices. You can go to prison and waste your life, or you go to prison and do something constructive with your life." At first, Daniel tried to return to his old ways.
When I went to prison, I had a choice. I mean, there for a while, I got involved in dealing drugs in prison. Because that's the world I came from. And I had the ability to bring drugs in and other stuff like this. But then, I sat in my cell one day and said, what do you want to do with your life? When you get out, you can't go back to the college environment and deal drugs. I'm going to have to go to the streets and deal drugs. And I'm going to get killed, or I'm going to kill somebody, and I'm going to be back here. Or do I want to be a lawyer? Do I want to be a judge? Do I want to be a legislator? And I actually sat in my cell and thought about all that.
Luckily for him, the prison had just started a program with Wayne State University College of Lifelong Learning, where Manville was able to complete his bachelor's degree.
I had completed 3 years of an undergrad degree from Central Michigan University. And I finished that degree by correspondence courses. So I had decided once I went to prison that I would do something with my time. So you can either do time or you can let time do you. And I decided that I was going to do the time in the manner I wanted.
It wasn't long before Manville began to be interested in law.
I had a friend that was going to law school at Wayne State University. And at the end of each semester, she would ask me which of her law books from the classes she took did I want. Back then, she could bring them up, drop them off, and they would give them to me. So I was reading textbooks that were used in law school, and I also taught myself how to do legal research.
Manville befriended another prisoner who was also interested in law. Before long, they were helping fellow prisoners with their cases.
We hooked up and more or less created a jailhouse lawyer law firm inside the prison. So we'd help other people do litigation and, things that we felt violated our rights, we'd litigate on that too. So I decided, based upon all that, and really the way the prisons operated back then, and they still do, I decided that, I had to do something.
Manville left prison after serving his 3 years with a new sense of purpose.
I tell people that prison was almost one of the best things that happened to me in life, because I was on the downswirl. I was leaving the college environment and dealing drugs on the street and in Flint. So, you had to carry a gun there. You always had to be worried about somebody, ripping you off. So it was not, the future was not looking good for me.
Manville's decisions in prison set him on a new path with a new sense of purpose once he was released. He applied to and was accepted into law school and graduated. Still, he had the hurdle of a felony conviction to overcome before he could be accepted to the bar.
When I put in for admission to the state bar, we went back to this judge and asked him for a letter of recommendation. And he was retired then, but he wrote to the state bar and said, look, This is what I told Manville then. And from everything that I've seen, everything I've read about him, he did what I suggested. And I would have no objection if you admitted him to the bar.
That did it. Manville was accepted to the bar and immediately began devoting himself to his new passion, prisoners' rights.
There is a whole area of law that has developed under prisoners' rights. Prior to the end of the 60s and the beginning of the 70s, prisoners were considered slaves of the state by the court system, and they really could not sue on very few issues at all. It wasn't until that time period that the court started recognizing, and this was more of a, dealing with religious rights, that the court started recognizing that prisoners had any rights at all. And the court said, you don't have the same rights as you would as a civilian. And the Constitution does not stop at the prison wall, but you have less rights than a private citizen. And the standard for claiming that your rights were violated is quite higher than it is for somebody not in prison.
So Daniel began trying to expand those rights. Over the years, he has worked on hundreds of legal cases on behalf of prisoners and quite literally wrote the book on prisoner rights.
Myself and another co-author, we wrote this manual that is 8.5 by 11, 900 and some pages, just talking about, prisoners' rights. That really tells an inmate how to file the complaint, how to do the trial, and it tells them how to take it all the way to the United States Supreme Court.
It is no easy thing for a prisoner to get a complaint heard.
I would say probably 95% of the cases that are filed by inmates are dismissed within a year or so, just because the inmates do not have the knowledge of how to litigate. And, and you're opposing another, an attorney on the other side. They don't have the skills for doing their legal research. They don't have the skills for, effectively arguing their case.
Even if prisoners know how to file a case, the system can still be rigged against them.
Before you file a lawsuit, you got to file grievances and exhaust the grievance process. And if you don't do that properly, then the court will dismiss your lawsuit. But once you file the grievance, a number of officers will retaliate against you. They'll write a false misconduct ticket saying that you threaten them. So what happens that stuff? You go from being in general population, being found guilty because the officer said you did it, and you're saying you didn't do it. And since you're a convict, the hearing officers are not going to give your statement the same, level of consideration as an officer. And, then they rule against the inmate. It's a system that is not set up to really be fair.
Manville had felt this kind of injustice personally. Today, he is a clinical professor with Michigan State University College of Law and the director of their Civil Rights Clinic. Here, he trains a new generation of students to defend the civil rights of prisoners. These are rights based on the 13th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution that guarantee equal protection under the law, regardless of race, religion, or other personal characteristics. Examples include freedom of speech, press, and assembly, the right to vote, freedom from involuntary servitude, and the right to equality in public places. Discrimination occurs when a person's civil rights are denied or interfered with because of their membership in a particular group, such as prisoners.
I have roughly each semester 8 or 10 law students assigned, to the clinic, and they will develop the case or the cases in the same manner that I would. What that means is that the clinic will accept cases from the federal court, and when I say accept cases, we will be appointed to represent the prisoners. What usually happens is that prisoners will file these lawsuits, what we call as pro se, representing themselves. And then after it has been litigated for a year or two, or even 3 or 4 at times, then a court will come and ask us to provide representation. we get permission to go back and do discovery, we do deposition, we'll do an entry on land, which means that we'll go right inside the prison where the events occurred so that students can observe the area so that they're more familiar with what's going on. And then the students will actually try the cases in the same manner that I would. They will do the opening, closing, put on the witnesses, and take the jury verdict. And I train them to do all that.
Manville and his team like to work on what they call impact litigation. Similar to a class action lawsuit, this is any kind of legal settlement that impacts many prisoners. In one of their landmark cases, Manville's team addressed Michigan's policy of denying routine dental care to prisoners for the first 2 years of their incarceration.
What Michigan Department of Correction is doing, when you first enter the prison, you cannot get any type of dental care for your first 2 years. They say you can get urgent care, but what happens is if I've got a cavity and if I've got pain, I go to see the dentist within that 2 years, and he looks at it, oh yes, you got a cavity there, but I can't fix it, because if I fix it, that means that I have to give you routine dental care, and by MDOC policy, for the first 2 years, you cannot get routine care. So they either subject people to prisoners to long-term dental pain, or you agree to have your tooth extracted. Both situations are unconstitutional.
By helping one prisoner get routine dental care upon entry to prison, Manville's team won rights for all prisoners in the state. Manville has also fought for the religious freedom of prisoners. In one case, his team challenged a prison's refusal to provide kosher meals for Jewish prisoners. Winning that case meant that Michigan prisons had to honor the religious convictions of all prisoners in the meals they served.
We said in that settlement that, you know, you just can't provide or prepare one meal, one kosher meal, and have another 30 Jewish folks in the same prison and give them the other stuff. What we're doing is we're saying, hey, if you're going to do this, okay, you know, if you want to settle, you have to apply these changes, giving kosher meal to everybody at that prison and to every other prison in the state that serves religious meals.
In another case, Manville and his team helped ensure that no prisoner could be unfairly treated because of their language.
This inmate was from Middle East, okay? His family was over there. He came to the United States in the 90s, was going to Wayne State, and he ended up killing somebody, so he's in prison for life. His parents do not speak English, write English, anything else like that. So whenever he would get letters from them, the prison system would reject it because their reason was they could not read it. So they didn't know whether they were planning on, you know, sending drugs to him, escapes, whatever, like that. So after, you know, a few times trying to get this, you know, in, letters in and everything, okay, he just gave up writing his family. And the other means for communication in the prison system is through telephone calls. And if you've got the money, and you know, you can make a call. But MDOC policy was that inmates could only call in the United States, Mexico, Puerto Rico, and Canada. And so our thing was, you know, you've got to make something available to this guy. You can't completely deny him. And so we were appointed by the court, and we started litigating it. And we were only going for him. We were not bringing a class action. I thought that if we won, we might impact, but you know, we're only suing on behalf of him. And they would not settle, even though they were talking about changing everything and opening up. So we went to trial. And we spent, you know, 4 days trying the case. So we won, and we got an injunction saying that they had to open, you know, allow him to do it. Within 30 days, they issued a new policy, basically making it available for prisoners to call 168 different countries.
Though Manville would love to see students in the Civil Rights Clinic become defense attorneys for prisoners, he is realistic about what to expect.
It's very hard to make a living doing prisoners' rights or civil rights cases. with especially in prisoners' rights. If you're going to do anything like this, you almost have to go to work for a big law firm who will allow you to, as part of your obligation to the justice system, to take what they call pro bono cases, and the firm, lets them put in X amount of hours, a year, in developing these cases.
Because of this, many of Manville's students become prosecutors, the very lawyers who would be helping put individuals behind bars, but with an important difference.
Most of them were saying, I'm not going to open the jail gates and let everybody out. But they said that, as a prosecutor, I will listen to, and read the document to see who these people are and look at it and see whether they really deserve 5 years and not 1 year, or really deserve prison and not jail and probation. So I've impacted, on a positive level. I would rather have everybody come out, as prisoners' rights attorneys, but I know better. And I'm willing to accept changing people.
Manville is well aware that education was what allowed him to turn his life around in prison.
I would say that has to be a key factor in almost everybody's life to turn their life around. I know one guy two guys, they went in with less than a high school education, serving basically life sentences. In there, they got educated. Both of them ended up with, getting bachelor's degrees in different areas. They're both out here. They're both very successful. How are you going to come out and get a good job and make money to, survive, to have a family, unless you get either an education, which we're talking about academic education, or you learn skills like welding?
Unfortunately, programs like the one that gave him the chance to finish his degree in prison are being cut, leaving prisoners with fewer opportunities to better themselves in prison and fewer ways to benefit the community when they are released.
When I was in prison, like I said, they had Jackson Community College at Jackson Prison, and they had a lot of people enrolled in that. And they had the Wayne State University College of Lifelong Learning, and Spring Arbor College came in there. And eventually the legislature cut all that. And I lobbied against it, and it did not do any good. I said, look, you're paying $25,000 a year to keep somebody incarcerated. You can spend, $2,500, $3,000 a year to educate them. And, you're not going to have 100% success rate, but if you can prevent 70, 80% of these people from coming back. If you just think of 100 people, and if you can keep 70 of them from coming back at $25,000, I mean, that is a tremendous amount of money that you can save. Plus, they get employed, they pay taxes, their girlfriends, wife, their kids are not on welfare. I mean, one thing after the other, and it's just really, can impact on the money that the state is paying to take care of people.
Daniel would like to see everyone in prison have a chance to better themselves. In fact, if there is one thing he learned in prison, it is that everyone deserves a second chance.
People in society who do wrong like I did. And for the majority of people, you cannot throw away the key. We do stuff wrong in life, and some are serious enough that we may have to go to prison. But if you give them the opportunity to develop themselves, a lot of these people will return to society and will not go back, that they will become productive members. But you have to give them that opportunity in prison, and when they get out, you have to give them the opportunity to do that. What I want people to take from this is that give these people a chance. Some are going to fail, but just because one fails, don't hold it against everybody else. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in life that has not, hit some type of situation where they have done wrong. They've been on the border of doing wrong, something like that, and they pulled themselves back. So give that person a chance.